Now let's take up some more simple processes and let's go into a little more specific lineup. We have something and nothing, and we have exteriorization and interiorization, and we have the formula of communication. And if we've got the formula of communication, we naturally have affinity, reality, communication. See, we've got that little set of brackets. We have the dynamics, and we have the no-to-sex scale. Now, this last, the no-to-sex scale, is, of course, a condensation of applause or attention. It's a condensation of attention. When attention is really crushed down to the last notch before it becomes rock, where the last human or living manifestation you get on it is sex. When a person has all of his attention on sex, we just realized that no-to-sex scale is an attention scale. That's condensation of attention. And his condensation of attention brings, of course, if he's way down the bottom, a concentration on sex. Then we find somebody who doesn't have a total concentration on sex. He's trying to keep the current body alive. And by the way, that can be, you see, a lower no-to-sex scale. It goes no-to-sex, and then no-to-sex, and then no-to-sex, and then no-to-sex, and then no-to-sex, and no-to-sex. You see, so he could actually come in on a lower eating scale than upper-range sex. You see, he can go all the way through the gamut again. This is just varying degrees of condensing attention. So don't be very surprised to find out that when an individual has his attention mainly upon eating, that he is fastened there at the no-to-sex scale on eating. And just at the bottom of eating, of course, is excreting. So Freudian talk on this subject and so on. These people who go around watching the X-Lax ads and complaining about their bowels and so forth. By the way, most capitalists have constipation trouble. It's a fact, they do. I've processed a lot of them. One of them, most notable one, whose name you would know very quickly, by the way, he didn't have a bowel movement in 9 days. That is to say, every 9 days he had a bowel movement. What would you say a guy like this was doing? Brother, he's really got a scarcity of havingness, hasn't he? He's really got a scarcity of food. He's really worried about that future ration. So his concentration is on what? His concentration is on somethingness all the time. He's got to put something in the future, something in the future, something in the future. Whereas his happiness depends upon a very calm ability to have something and nothing at will, either one, determined. See? While we come along, we find somebody whose attention is totally on symbols. He's much better off than somebody whose attention would be ground down real hard on the subject of sex, but he's still pretty jammy. So he's always putting something in the future in terms of symbols. Now, what happens to these individuals? An individual who is jammed on attention for sex, of course, will put up sex in order to get attention. You'll see these fellows, drummers, standing around second-rate hotels telling sex stories and so forth. You'll see writers like, not mentioning any names, but Erskine Caldwell, putting up all of his mock-ups on the sexual band. And wondering why he has domestic trouble. Characters like Gaylord Houser. He would be putting up eatingness and so forth, for his attention, and so forth. Well, if you were to process somebody like Gaylord Houser, why wouldn't, don't be too surprised to find him very stuck on the subject of sex. You could open the case, you just know this about somebody. This person was a cook, and this person's fascination was totally on the subject of cookery and so forth. Why, it'd be enough to start open the case. You'd get your longest and quickest communication lag and your biggest gain in the case simply by saying, let's get some things you're not trying to feed somebody. Let's get some things you're not trying to be fed, and so forth. And we've got exteriorization, interiorization, plus eatingness. And this would be a very effective technique, you see? Just design the technique at the level of case. All right, there's somebody else comes along, and he's got all his attention on thinking, figure. Well, don't try to interest this person too much on the subject of sex, because if you were to advance sex to them, they'd figure on the subject of sex. They wouldn't experience sex, they'd try to figure it. If you gave them almost anything, why, they'd figure it. Fascinating. And now we go upscale a little bit, and we get effort. And somebody who's always putting up a muscle, or putting up the amount of work he does or something of that sort as a highly desirable thing. He's in the effort band, so on. In other words, his attention is on effort, and he uses effort to get attention. Now we go up the line, we get emotion. Well, somebody's on the emotion band. He'll put up emotion to get attention, and he will give his attention to emotion in order to communicate with this fellow. Let's say this fellow's somewhere in the emotional range. Well, it's enough just to know he's in the emotional range. Don't ever make the mistake of believing that everybody is in that emotional band. There are people much worse off than that emotional band, and there are people better off than that emotional band. It just happens that the bulk of mankind are in that emotional band to some degree that gives us the concentration of the tone scale on that emotional band. You see why we have that tone scale hanging there with all the emotions on it? Well, actually, effort is below that, and looking is above it. So we try to get this fellow's attention, and we don't get his attention worth a nickel. We just try to talk to him thinkingly, you know? We try to reason with him. No. We've got to emote. Well, don't think that emotion is lower than reason. It is not. Emotion is higher than reason. And we get somebody, and we say, and they answer up on this basis, you know? And it's totally irrational what you're talking about. That's why you can always get youth to stampede in some fool direction or another. You can get them to stampede about communism if you get emotional enough about the Waker. If you get emotional enough about anything, you can get people to stampede in one direction or another. Well, you say they don't think, therefore they're cattle. Oh, no, cattle go in for effort. If you want cattle to behave, why, take a club. They're sitting right there on the effort band, neither above nor below. All right. We get up above that, and we have the level of observation. And you get somebody who has to have attention by lookingness. And he puts up simply things to look at. See? And he sees things. Actually sees them. And so forth. Why, we have somebody who is in the look band. Well, actually, that's very light attention. Very light attention. And we get above this, and we find out that knowingness is there. Now, this individual's attention is liable to be on knowingness, but if he gets any attention mixed up with knowingness, it's some lower grade of knowingness. See that? It's a lower notice-sex band, you would think. The second attention enters into knowingness because, actually, knowingness requires no attention, and there's where we get the Indian old man, the very kind, benign fellow, all that sort of thing. Why? He knows, and he doesn't care whether you know or not. This is very baffling to an American who is stuck on lower attention bands. He just knows, and so he knows. It isn't up to him to tell you. Nothing. Americans don't operate that way. Their social culture and so forth pin them into the attention band. And anybody who tried to detachedly know in this country would soon come to no good end. But in the East, they are perfectly content to leave them alone. A fella can go up and sit on a mountaintop for years. If he did in this country, the cops would be out and pick him up for vagrancy. Here we have this notice-sex scale, and we have ourselves a great deal of processing in here. We have an awful lot of simple processes. We look at this individual, and this individual on our two-way communication, we first pick it up, says, well, actually, my parents beat me, and they beat me, and they beat me, and they beat me, and just to get a different slant on the conversation, my parents beat me, and it's all their fault, no responsibility, no response. Where the hell is he stuck? Well, the family is part of the second dynamic, isn't it? And it's also part of the third dynamic, but the dynamics don't enter into the notice-sex scale. It's just condensed attention. He's stuck in sex. He's probably on some lower sex band. He's not only on sex, but he's in the past on the subject. Parents, they were the source of his body. See? And he's putting this woe and misery and travail up to get your attention. So how do we plot no to sex as a scale all the way down the line? How do we plot this? Let's take a very broad look at a very broad tone scale. And let's see that people who have things good about things are above a certain level in this tone scale, and people who have things bad about certain things are below a certain level on this scale. See that? Charlie, this is a new application of a very old idea that we divide the tone scale and we have a tone scale divided in half. Now let's find that the no to sex scale would come down in its broadest division, all on the good side of the ledger, down to this dividing line. That is to say, relaxed and happy about the whole thing, you see? And then there's good news, and you can have fun, and so forth. That's no to sex. Every part of that band can lie above that scale. Now we drop down below this divisional line, and we find out that it's all bad. And we just get this as a classification. It's all bad. It's horrible over there. Oh, things are terrible. And in the first instance, why, knowingness is, we get it... good, and looking is good, and emoting is good, and effort is good, and thinking is good, and symbols are good, and eating is good, and sex is good, and it's all okay. See, I mean, you know. Now we'll drop down below the line, and we find knowing is bad, and looking is bad, and so on. There's a bad curve on each one of these things. We go right on down to sex. See that? Well, the very funny part of it is... these two upper and lower portions of this design scale could be redivided again to the degrees that this was true. And the odd part of it is we get the difference between self-determinism and other determinism. Above this band, we have self-determinism. If an individual, all by himself, operating all by himself, were to put out a philosophy on the subject of any one of these things from no to sex, we would find out that he would put it out pretty broadly, that it was all right. It would only be after he had been terrifically interfered with in any one of these departments that it would become all wrong. So we could say, bluntly, that other determinism would enter below the line, and that this lower, bad, other determinism, good, is self-determinism. So above this line, we have self-determined opinion, and below this line, we have other determined opinion. The idea is that nobody would really think bad or try to suppress anything unless he had really been turned around as a Thetan to almost total attention on other determinisms which had in mind nothing but the control of him. And he, reflecting this alone, would give this kind of a manifestation. See how this is? All right. Now let's take a look at this simple breakdown processing again and find that somebody comes up, sex is bad, sex is bad, sex is bad, sex is... Oh, boy. He's dragging bottom. You wouldn't be able to find him with a Kelvin fathometer. See? Sex is bad, sex is bad. We get a priest or bishop, something like that. Sort. I'm not just introducing that. The operation of this particular brand of religion, you get the idea I'm really death on religion right now, but I'm not. I'm not death on religion at all. I'm just death on that type of religion which is designed to be a control religion. And we get these boys going around making a total profession out of branding sex as horrible, awful, and something you mustn't indulge in, and so forth. Well, what are they trying to tell people? They're trying to tell people, hey, you can't survive in the next generation. Hey, you can't survive in the next generation. Hey, we don't want you around. Hey, we hate you. Boy, we're going to get at you one way or another. We're going to cut your throat. Sex is bad. Sex is bad. Sex is bad. See how this is? Well, now, just before they drift into that band, they're eating is bad. Eating is bad. Eating is bad. Eating is bad. Oh, you know? Oh, you'd just better eat... nothing at all, nothing, really eat nothing whatsoever, but condensed peanuts. Now, that's what's best for you, and that's probably the only diet. And I think that maybe if you ate a little custard and condensed peanuts, that you'd get along all right. But otherwise, we can't, and what do we have? We have fadism with diets and things like that. We also, on that band, have medicine. You go into a hospital for treatment of the stomach, and they'll put you on a diet that'll kill you just right away, quick. What's wrong with you is that eating is bad. They won't let you eat anything. Saw a fellow one time dragged in. He was practically starved to death. So what'd they put him on? They put him on what you call a sippy diet. A sippy diet has to do with, a very small custard three times a day, and I think about three glasses of milk a day. Well, it killed him. Anybody who goes to the hospital with ulcers either will get out of there in awful bad condition or feet first. That's a guarantee. Standard treatment for ulcers to cut out somebody's stomach. Never cured anybody yet. On the second operation, by the way, they almost always die. And if they don't make it on the second operation, they kick off on the third operation. Something wrong with a fellow's stomach, we'll cut it out. Hasn't cured anybody yet, but it's a standard operation. Don't get medicine on the subject of eating unless you want to get into real trouble as a patient. You tell them you eat just fine. I don't care if you're... I don't care if you can't keep weak tea down. You tell them you're eating all right. Otherwise, they're liable to have you. I don't know what they do with all these stomachs they cut out, but they probably worship them or something. Anyway, now, every time we get the something is bad about it, something is bad about it, something is bad about it, we are looking at a low-toned operation. Now, this seems to be an awfully sweeping statement on my part, but it is very justified in this degree. In issue 16G, you'll find the operation. It's bad over there. There's quite a discussion of that in 16G. And that is how you keep somebody from assuming a viewpoint. And control, in essence, is only an operation. Any control is only an operation which seeks to deny a person viewpoints. And it's bad is you mustn't look at it. You mustn't experience it. You mustn't have it. You mustn't do it. You mustn't be it. See? And that, in essence, is what this whole consideration of bad is. Well, now, if you just got everybody rushing around saying something was bad, you would finally give them a resistance to that viewpoint, which would give them a compulsive viewpoint sooner or later. They'd say, I'm not going to occupy that viewpoint. I'm not going to put my attention on that viewpoint. Well, Lord, if you say, I'm not going to put my attention on that viewpoint long enough and concentrate hard enough, you're going to put up enough energy of your own to slide down the path of. See that? I mean, anything you resist, you have a tendency to become. So if you get these characters all rushing around saying it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, zoop. And they'll go into what they consider then a bad spot. What is your pre-clear doing who says he has no joy in existence? He has slid into a bad spot, and when he is in this bad viewpoint, see, consideration only, it's is it bad? It's, I shouldn't be there. And is it good? I should be there. See, I mean, there's two considerations in terms of location, space. What kind of condition do you find this individual in who doesn't find any joy in life? Well, he's below this hypothetical division line, and he's on an other determined no-to-sex scale. So there are actually two no-to-sex scales, aren't there? One is a self-determined no-to-sex scale at which an individual really doesn't have to say things are good or bad. He would have a greater tendency to say they're good. They would tolerate them, in other words. And this lower scale, it would be an other determined proposition, and that would be determined by it's bad. So learn to look your pre-clear over and realize what he is into. And, of course, good or bad, no to sex, is a problem in exteriorization, interiorization, because it is a problem of denied viewpoints or desirable viewpoints. And get that very clearly. It's bad to look from there. This is simply a consideration. No more, no less, a consideration. Just like gravity, it's a consideration. It's a great shock to a pre-clear one of these days when you're running him and all of a sudden he realizes fully and entirely that he's dealing with considerations. You know, he considered it was bad, so it was bad. And he can change his mind and consider that it's good. He doesn't even have to go through a communication system to do it. And all of a sudden, he feels a lot better. Now, you get a bunch of fellows sitting around the hole bitching about the ship or about the service or something of the sort. You know, if you were to have some kind of a measuring device, such as the amount of energy they could put up, or if you could even measure their appetite, let's be very practical, measure their appetite, and so forth, you would discover that before such a discussion, they would have a much higher vitality than after such a discussion. They've all sat there and agreed completely on the bad viewpoint. See? You get a couple of these characters in a crew, and they go talking about how bad the viewpoint is, how bad the viewpoint is, how bad the viewpoint is. I'm eating, you know. That's one of the favorite ones at sea. You can't get into sex. There's not much difficulty there. You just have to hang in the eating this band. When you get ashore, of course, they hang up entirely in the sexual band and don't eat. They practically starve to death. Navy knows this so well that they serve their noon meal as their best meal. They don't serve the best meal of the day at 6 o'clock. They serve it at 12 o'clock. That's because sailors go on liberty usually at 4 o'clock, and they know they won't eat. So you get these characters sitting around saying how bad the food is, how bad the food is, and they get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, that's all. And they just all agree that it's so bad, and their consideration finally runs them down into lower band, other determinism. Well, if you could just get men complaining heavily enough about food, you could control them utterly. Ha-ha, control mechanism enters in here, doesn't it? Why? Because how bad it is over there is generally considered to be and could be considered to be an other determined operation. See, how bad it is over there has got a pitch to it. Unlike how good it is over there. How good it is over there can also have a pitch to it. See, and this pitch could go this way. You see that little red house with that figure 10,000 volts? Well, boy, it's really good in there. See? Well, you've got consideration involved here. And your consideration is other determinism, self-determinism. Now, above these two, we get a band where there is no consideration. See, we get a theoretical, whole new no-to-sex scale where there's no consideration. And there have actually... I said we divide this thing in two parts, just above which we have no-to-sex, all good, okay, viewpoints fine, and below that, no-to-sex, all bad, viewpoints bad, mustn't be there. Now, we go above this scale. We just abandon the scale. We look at no-to-sex again up here, and we find out that it can exist without any consideration whatsoever, good, bad, or indifferent. It can just exist. No consideration until somebody thinks about it. Well, you know there have been societies in that upper band? Whole societies. The Polynesian societies were up there one time. Everybody happy and so forth. Quite interesting that most of them went around operating as thetans, too, in that society. There was plenitude. They didn't have to worry too much. They lived on lots of fruits and nuts and fish, and it wasn't like killing your brothers. It was only when times got very rough and their ability to navigate across long ranges of sea deteriorated that they had to start eating each other and having difficulties with food and so forth. When their navigation went to pieces, their food supply did. Furthermore, there is some evidence that the islands out through the South Pacific have deteriorated in terms of size. A lot of other considerations on this. They've certainly deteriorated in terms of health thanks to the American whalemen. And others came along, spread measles, which was a deadly disease, and yaws and so forth. These have spread through those islands, so you never see anything like that today. But such societies were in existence, by the way, according to the Catholic records, those which weren't destroyed out of piety, in Hispaniola. The type of society there was quite markedly this way, and what do you know? We again have a coordinated factor of everybody practically exteriorized. What kind of communication did they have in the South Pacific? You find white men still standing around in complete awe of this. Fellow go up on top of a mountain or something of the sort, and he'd sit down at a certain hour every day or something of the sort. Everybody would sit down someplace who were the communicators of these tribes across some vast area of sea, and bobbity-bob-bob, bobbity-bob-bob-bob, and they'd come down and they'd say, well, there's a steamer or something. This was in modern times. I mean, the white men have seen this take place. They've just been flabbergasted. How does he know that Maoki will be in here tomorrow? How does he know that there was a hurricane down at Tahuti? How the dickens say? Well, the guy went out and looked. I mean, nothing simpler. I mean, such a simple explanation that nobody could possibly have embraced it. And this very interesting communication system people thought was telepathy. Well, telepathy, if you please, is the lower end of the band. Telepathy is the crushed end of the band. It's compulsive release of thought. You might even say, and I'd hate to introduce this as any kind of a serious theory, but it's just an interesting theory. You might say that if Mest was ever alive, if physical objects were ever alive, they have become condensed to such a degree that they telepath their condition by which we know them. We could say that. Not a serious theory, you understand. But I'm just giving you the idea of what telepathy is. Telepathy is mind reading. Oh, no, no. I mean, this is one of those practices where you just have to squash a guy alive to get him exuding thought like this. A thetan exteriorizes and goes over and looks in somebody's head or simply listens or something. So this isn't communicating by telepathy any more than talking is communicating by telepathy. I mean, the communication line is a positive line. It's positive. You say hello, the fellow says hello. See, that's not telepathy. Telepathy is something which is understood to be, by practice, quite something else. Well, all right, let's look at this note of sex scale, and we realize that we get an exudation of evil and so forth out of certain areas and things and stuff, you know? And it's a sort of a telepathic kick around. Well, that's the lower end of it. You go into a building, you know, and you know some awful crime has happened in the place. Very interesting. Over in England, I went into the Queen's Theatre, and one time I went over there to see George Wichelow was on the stage there and doing some magical tricks, and I dropped in to find out what was going on. He invited me down, and afterwards I asked the company, I said, what happened around here? There's something happened around here that was really grim. Well, they kicked it around for a little while, and they didn't quite know, but they knew a week or so later they'd found out. It was one of the plague burial pits. The Queen's Playhouse had been erected on a plague burial pit. There were Lord knows how many thousands of bodies heaped into that pit when the plague struck Great Britain. It exuded evil. It exuded illness. You wonder why that theater, by the way, has never been a popular theater. It couldn't be. Now, we don't get into very mystic things here, do we? We could get a bunch of thetans in such a state of shock that they were still holding on, you know, and they'd still be, if they were in a bad state of shock, they'd be way down tone scale, which would mean everything is bad. So everything is bad and stuck are synonymous, and that's the only point I've been trying to make with you. Everything bad and stuck can be considered to be synonymous, and that note of sex scale does not become bad or vicious, and there's nothing wrong with a note of sex scale until we get on the second part, lower band, of this hypothetical division we've given here. Then no to sex becomes very bad indeed. But what's the physical behavior which makes it bad? Stuck. If you could unstick a guy, everything would cease to be bad. You get this? Now, this is about the neatest trick that you can pull as a monitor. If you can unstick him, it will cease to be bad. You don't have to run the concept it's bad. You don't have to address the consideration it's bad. The fact that he's stuck is bad. That's the worst there is. See? So if you just unstick him, he'll get over this kind of viewpoint. His good health depends utterly in his ability to have a good opinion of any and every viewpoint in the complete universe or universes. Gives you an immediate index between whether one likes his fellows or dislikes them, and the ability of that individual. A person who dislikes his fellows has very poor ability compared to one who likes his fellows. If you were hiring somebody, you would simply have to ask him the question. He might toady up to your pander one way or the other just to throw the weight for him so he get his job. But you just have to ask him a kind of question of how he liked his fellow workers, this and that, and get his response. Just look at the response on his face or watch his hands, and you would know immediately whether or not he was a good worker. Why? He'd like his fellows. And there you have about all you need to know about simple diagnosis and processing wrapped up in that. Does he like life? He's okay. Does he hate it? He's in horrible shape, and he's stuck. If he likes life, he's free. Then how do you make somebody like life? Unstick him. How do you unstick them? Make them like life. That's really all there is to processing.